in all fields of human activity is the main sign of our time, that the revolution goes apparently as deep as the revolution only once went in the development of human history, namely when the human mind changed from its mythical frame to a logical frame. It was then that all basic principles, which had for millenniums been silently accepted as the right way of human conduct, as the right way of human procedure in all fields, had to be entirely overthrown. Apparently our time, our situation is asking of us just the same. The long and in a way harmonic development of Western civilization based on certain silent assumptions of metaphysical nature, assumptions like who is man, what is his place in the world, what is his relation to God, to nature, to history, to humanity, silent assumptions that have been taken over from the Hebrews and Greeks and only modified by this whole line of Renaissances and Reformations, but never really broken. With the 19th century, this total break, which makes that all our principles seem to be no longer reliable, and especially our innermost principles, the principles of our conduct of life, or what we call philosophically ethical principles, and our moral conduct. We have seen that in overcoming this crisis, in giving the first tentative new answers to an entirely changed situation, science, especially physical science, physics, astronomy, mathematics, and the arts have given preliminary answers. They, of course, themselves, having done that, are looking now around for philosophy. It is strange that for the first time since the glorious start and the glorious finish of this tremendous scientific development in the West, it are just natural scientists, physicists, like Heisenberg, Schrödinger, who are crying out suddenly, my God, we are lost, we do not know what terminology we speak anymore. Where is philosophy? Where are the principles, the metaphysical principles we really work according to? Because we know one thing, we do not work anymore according to the old principles. We are working according to new principles, but what are they? Where are they? And they try in despair from their sciences, like Schrödinger. Einstein also tried that already, to give new life blood to philosophic speculation, to encourage philosophy by giving them results and questions to answer. But we have seen the bad plight in which philosophy is. After it had been the servant, but the slave, rather, of theology in the Middle Ages, it had become the slave of sciences in the more modern time. And it can hardly recover and even face the tasks that only philosophy can accomplish, namely to find, by analysis of the former metaphysical principles and foundations which have become shaky, possibilities for new foundations. So there's much hope. It is the same thing in the arts. If we listen to a discussion in the arts, the usual art talk today, then we find that our greatest artists, like Picasso, are almost in despair never to be able really to say what principles they, according to which principles they really work. They are in the same jam, but they know for sure, and they are right, that they have discovered entirely new forms of expression. Forms of expression that have this strange quality which no forms of expression formerly had in the arts, namely the quality to make transformatory use of almost all forms of expression in the arts that ever have been created. It is like opening up of a possibility which we never dreamt of, namely, of really understanding the past by making the past, transforming it, our own. That's why I call this chance, preliminary, the chance of presence. A presence of the human mind, so to speak, that can encompass the highest forms and values created in all times and can assemble them, using them to express an entirely new and much wider possibility of experience of men with the world. The obvious changes, outer changes, namely the more and more growing necessity of getting what we could call a global consciousness, the fact that by the communication and relation established by now all around the globe, mostly in terms of enmity instead of terms of understanding, but established nevertheless, force us to accept this new issue and to try to meet it. In the field of ethics, or what we can call preliminary that, we find the most cruel confusions of all the confusions we meet in our age. It could be that the acceptance of certain principles of a certain definite way of life, innermost principles, principles that enter man's conscience and are embedded there and become hidden conductors of his way of life, that this is a change or a result that takes place least in the last instance of such a development. Nevertheless, we have, just in order to see the danger clearly and the confusion fully, we have to analyze it and find it just in this realm, in the innermost realm, where men's decisions are made, and not always consciously made, very often involuntarily, to avoid the term unconscious or subconscious, made by custom, made by silent agreements which are not even questioned anymore. All this we are lacking at the moment. Ethics has been an age-old discipline of philosophy. One, as they formerly called it, one of the main sciences, better fields, of philosophic and metaphysical research. it has lately dropped entirely out of philosophy. Only sideline philosophers are concerned with ethical questions, and what we get is a kind of science, historical science, of what so-called ethical principles have been used by humanity in former times, how they compare. This is a very wonderful and useful exploration. It is strictly scientific and has therefore the tremendous danger of induced so-called objectivity, which means that we just look at those things and have a scientific and aesthetic joy of them, but that we are no more involved and no more concerned, that the thing becomes for us a show, like for the modern baseball fan, baseball has become a show, not a play to participate in to risk one's own bones, but a show to look gleefully how others risk their bones. So to look back how people, nations, societies in past times risked their souls, to speak metaphorically and only metaphorically, or risked really the very existence of their innermost personal life in order to follow certain, to establish first certain systems of morality and then to follow them through blood and sweat, sacrificing themselves for them. This all can become a wonderful show. It's enough cruelty in it, as Nietzsche discovered. Cruelty was one of the main phenomena that always has been developed in the enforcement, establishment and enforcement of certain different sets of morality. So much involved in it that the very hypersensitive Friedrich Nietzsche was afraid that cruelty itself, for its own sake, might have been one of the main motors for establishing morality altogether, which made him later suspicious that morality might be nothing in the established system, but a hidden will to power and to rule of certain layers of society or certain governments that like to pretend that they know what's good for humanity and try to make us do what they think is good for us. This is already the first fundamental criticism of morality at all, altogether, per se, which we have witnessed in our age. Now, we have to look at certain forms in which the growing confusion takes place. Without the knowledge of those forms, we cannot systematically follow the development. To talk about a confusion, to try to analyze a confusion, brings with it the sad necessity to increase first the confusion to a certain degree. One cannot meet a confusion by a preconceived new, brand new scheme of clear ideas that will put order into everything. That means one does not really understand what brings the confusion about. The confusion has first to be realized fully by a human mind in order to find the way for possible new vistas. When we reread today the Communist Manifesto, published in the middle of the 19th century, and call to our mind everything that has happened since in politics. Call to our mind all those ruined, brilliant, young, idealistic intellectuals of our own time who had to witness how their best ideals or ideas, as they call them, the essence of their real good will had been turned in the opposite, into a thing which they had to consider then, namely socialist imperialism and socialist totalitarianism, as we witness it today in the so-called Soviet Union, that not only nothing came out of it, but active nothingness, a principle of negation of all human values that those people had dreamt of and hoped to enlarge and to establish by the very path they followed. If we call all that to our mind and reread the first sentence of the Communist Manifesto, a specter is haunting Europe, the specter of communism. How true, how unfortunately true it has become, a specter. It was then a joke of this young and extremely idealistic materialist Karl Marx, who wanted to help things and thought he had found a way to establish everything new, a new world, a changed world, including new morals, real freedom, real justice, new ideals, new morals, and the well-being of all the world by a principle that seemed so simple, a principle derived from the material activities of men in production, seemingly going right to the basis of all human life, which in his opinion was the interchange of material with the world, production, and hoping to get rid of poverty and misery once and for all. He did not mean a specter. He meant it ironically. He meant those reactionaries think this is a specter, it is a ghost, and it is haunting you. Well, it has become a ghost, and it has been haunting the Western world and now the Eastern world since then, always. A ghost, something irreal, an ideology, a child of a human brain, or the human brain, in despair and in hope, a substitute, and a surefire substitute, it seems, for all the lost values, the loss of which was already felt at that time. How ghastly and ghost-like the performance since has become. How the ghost of this ideology, the wrong ideological aims without blood and without any content with reality. How when this ghost became powerful in the form of the Bolshevik government in Russia, it has been able to ruin one of the greatest movements of freedom of our time, the Spanish Revolution, to falsify it into an enterprise of an ideology that wants to conquer the world and to ruin the real ideals and intentions of a people oppressed for centuries. Lately, it has been able to ruin another wonderful event of this old time, namely the Hungarian Revolution, where things have become so that for the first time in history, young students and intellectuals overcame completely the age-old and especially modern superstition that politics is and has to be always only a play of interests. And the paroles they gave were not in that sense political paroles anymore, in that wrong sense, but clear-cut metaphysical slogans. What they asked in their need and in their terrible intellectual misery was only one thing: the right to truth, the freedom, not of this and that, but the freedom for the unhampered pursuit of truth. Here, by people who have not applied any philosophic analysis, the real kernel nucleus of our plight has been instinctively found. Well, they had a long experience. It is a bad experience for an historian who likes to think of himself as a free creative mind to be forced to rewrite the so-called history of the revolution every 3 years and to invent new lies, to be condemned to live in an entirely fictional world, like an insane man lives in a fictional world, without any contact with reality anymore, and to boot a fictional world that is not even created by them, their own insanity or their own neuroses or their own fantasy and imagination, but is prescribed like a kind of insanity for the human mind, a metaphysical insanity that is enforced by prescriptions. How it works in the arts, we have seen in Russia. One might say the last hope which we could still have had, that one or the other human mind would be able, under such terrible conditions, still in solitude, to create something that could be called great art. We hoped that Boris Pasternak would have done it. He took upon himself a voluntary exile within this so-called Soviet Russia. He was forbidden to write poetry. He was one of the few real great poets of Russia of that time, of whom everybody committed suicide except himself. He himself survived. He survived and did the great second best thing, as I hear from Russians. Namely, he translated Goethe, Shakespeare, and Greek authors into Russian. And the translations are supposed to be masterful translations. He also tried to keep track and give an account of his life in solitude, the life of a self-banished, self-exiled, free spirit, in that novel that has been smuggled out. If we read it, it is a disappointment. And we can see that no human mind, even the strongest, can really bear fruit under such conditions. Now this ghost that is like a vampire, a parasite of the human mind and its activities, paralyzes them. Such an ideology, such a preconceived overall and pseudo-metaphysical notion that is supposed to relieve the world. We have seen many of those ghosts. Communism, in that sense, is only one of them. We have seen racism in Germany, and it did the same thing, exactly the same thing, ruining only to look at cultural matters, not as the blood and torture and pains of millions of human beings which it caused, but only to look at the cultural results. It ruined the creative free spirit of their young intellectuals as well, and for decades to come, as the Russian experiment did. How do those ghosts come about? Is there a father of all those ghosts? Every nationalism we see today in the so-called colonial countries shows in itself immediately when it comes into birth already sure signs of beginning of a totalitarian principle of the same kind. The racial question, as we unfortunately experience now in America, is by no means dead. And millions of people get caught again and again by hidden ideologies, convictions which have always a tendency to develop themselves in totalitarian forms. The world is full still of those ghosts. Gilbert K. Chesterton, an English Catholic writer, when he came to the United States in the beginning of the century, said a very nasty word about America. He said, if there is anything worse than American materialism, it is American idealism. Well, was one of the biggest blows ever delivered to the American mind by an Englishman. He died too early to have been able to notice how much worse English idealism became than English materialism, and how much worse French and German and Russian idealism became than German and French and Russian materialism. If he had survived the period in order to make up his mind again, he might have reformulated me, saying, if there is anything more poisonous than the materialism of the modern mind, it is the idealism of the modern mind. idealism and materialism are forms of metaphysical thinking, forms. And we will find that any totalitarian system, well, let's say any of those ghosts we are talking about, how